It's The Adventures of Indiana Jim, number 47, for July 23rd, 2011.
And now, coming to you not exactly live from...
The Clefts of Insanity!
A man who needs no introduction.
Don't open that! It's an alien planet! Is there air? You don't know!
That international man of geekery. That intrepid arch-geekologist, Indiana Jim.
You have chosen wisely.
Don't tell me you've never heard of me.
I'll explain, and I'll use small words so that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
Let me put it this way. Have you ever heard of Plato, Aristotle, Socrates?
Yes.
Morons.
You may find this childish arrogance impresses servant girls.
The ability to speak does not make you intelligent.
You, boy, are arrogant, hot-tempered, and entirely too bold.
I like that. Reminds me of me.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, stupidity.
Why are you listening to this fellow? May I imagine he's wearing a costume, not a uniform.
I have entertained in all the courts of Europe and speak a ready wit in their every tongue.
I told you I was famous.
Hello and welcome back to The Adventures of Indiana Jim. I am that host. You ever seen Larry Boy? I am that host. I don't quite have the same thing, same verve as I am that hero. But here I am, and there you are. Whoever you are, if you're still listening, thank you very much. So it's been a while, and it seemed like a couple people kind of got the impression that I wasn't going to be podcasting this show anymore. And that wasn't what I was trying to say. The idea of branding and branching out and doing different things is something that I will explore further, I promise. But I'm still playing with it in my head. Plus, we're going to be moving soon. I'm still trying to figure out what my priorities are. I'm 34 and I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up. But the writing thing is certainly becoming more and more certain, it seems to me. And so basically, here's what I'm envisioning for this podcast is kind of turning the corner and thinking, like I said, the adventures of Indiana Jim may become different adventures. Whether or not, you know, it's Indy's adventures in writing, Indy's adventures in whatever, you know, who knows. So the adventures of Indiana Jim may just become the hub for a few different shows, if I get around to that. Once we get in our new space, figure out where everything's going, figure out what we're doing, I can sort of figure out what I'm going to do. And a lot of it has to do with school schedules and work schedules and, you know, things like that. And ventilation, you know, in the summer. Wow. Okay, so there you have it. Today's show, not going to be as long as shows normally are, because I wanted to give you something, and I wanted to sort of explain where my head is at. I'm currently working on the sequel to the Wars novella that I had out, Firefight at Overwatch Command, still available on Amazon.com, and you can go get your Kindle version, just the novella itself. You can get the Omnibus Print Edition for about $14 on Amazon, $8-something on Barnes & Noble. Sorry, Amazon, just undercut you there. But also, we will have the individual illustrated edition hopefully this year, maybe. Maybe early next. Not quite entirely sure. All I know is I need to really start cranking out some words on Mavericks number 2. And it's really, really kind of brought things home for me a little bit. You know, how much do I really want this? How, you know, a lot of people, it seems, have the discipline to sit down and just start cranking out words. And I still am not at that place where I can ignore fatigue, where I can ignore a headache, where I can ignore screaming children, where I can pound out a few hundred words here and there. I just can't do that. Too much stimuli for me. And it's really made me doubt myself and say, is this really something I can do? One of the things that I have done, and a lot of it is because I've got so many projects in the wings. I've got Mavericks 2 absorbing my mental thoughts, and I know it has to be done soon. I have other projects that I want to get done because I'm slowly getting more and more inspired by people having success in this new age of publishing and writing. And people that I know I can write just as good as. And I can entertain just as much because I get plenty of feedback from you guys that tells me how much you like it. And I still get feedback from Codename Starkeeper saying how great it was. And, it just makes me so happy to hear that. And I want to hear it again. And I have yet to produce a single fantasy novel, which is fantasy is where I live. Sci-fi is just kind of a side thing. And, I'm still considering different nom de plumes for other projects I'd like to start. And I can't do that unless I get Mavericks 2 out of the way. But then I have the Last Guardians podcast that I had been working on. I'm still working on, but it's like every day I have to decide what, today I come home from playing golf today, freaking hot out there. I couldn't even finish the last two holes. I was so tired. The back muscles didn't even work anymore. It's just like, ugh, I can't swing. So I was done after 16 holes. Shot 90. So that's my best score ever. Two less holes, but anyway, so I come home and I have a choice. I can pack to move. Who wants to do that? I can work on Last Guardians. I can work on Mavericks 2. I can record a podcast. I can do several different things. Which one am I going to do? Which one am I going to pick? Well, I got to get a podcast out. I know I have a topic and I have the ideas fresh in my head. Let's go. Let's get it done. And that's a choice. And that's as soon as I'm done recording this, I got to record an episode of the 49ers Fancast and then I got to pack. I won't be doing any writing. Maybe later tonight when I'm relaxing. Maybe, the other night I was going to sit down and I was going to crank out some, couple thousand words, hopefully. And then I find somebody opened an account on a website with my email address. Well, then I got to go take care of that. And I sit on customer service for half an hour. And I got to get the kids in bed. And then the wife comes home. And then, all the writing time just went right out the window. And that bugs me. But it doesn't bug me like it should, I guess. And I see Pitt Ballantyne and T. Morris, they're writing sprints, and I see other people joining them, and I'm like, I can't sprint. I sort of, amble along and then sit back down. that's where I'm at right now. And ideas come for Starkeeper 2, and I have to just not even open up the Celtics file. I just leave it alone for a while. And that kind of kills me. And I wish I had all the time to just, start going, do some on this project and do some on this project and really work at it. But I can't. So anyway, here's where I'm at now. What I wanted to bring up to you is a juxtaposition. And now I am going to name some names, but this is not a call out. This is not a shame on you. This is not a what are you doing? This is a huh? And it's out there in public. I'm not revealing anything. It's not inside baseball. But recently listened to Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, and on there were Michael Sullivan, or J. Michael? Michael J. Sullivan? Yeah. Michael J. Sullivan and Robin Sullivan, two different interviews. Robin Sullivan, of course, is the guy that wrote the, what's that series that I listened to? Podcast novel series? Yeah. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put his name. I know you all are screaming it. It's Rhaera. Thank you. the Rhaera revelations or whatever it is. And he had self-published up to the five books and now recently signed a contract with Orbit. And they're going to go ahead and release that sixth book with the consistent series of covers, which is cool for Orbit. I mean, that's awesome of them to do that. And then they're going to take each of the six and put them into three different books. And no aspersions on anyone that wants a trade publishing deal. None. Okay? As far as I know, they're getting a good deal out of it. And that's great. That is fantastic. But a couple things were interesting to me because here's an individual who has been successful self-publishing. Can pretty much write his own ticket self-publishing. And the interesting thing was Robin Sullivan comes on, and she's the head, basically, of Ryden Publishing. They do Nathan Lowell's books, and you know, a good small press. They're doing good work over there. And again, no aspersions on them, but something she said caught my interest. I mean, first of all, A, Michael saying, you know, I've made plenty of money on this, so it's not about the money. Fair enough. That's a fair point. But he said, you know, I want the prestige, or not the prestige, but it was something like, you know, that, well, it was, I guess he did use the word prestige, you know, that thing where you avoid the stigma where, oh, you're only a self-published author. And he didn't want that stigma. He wanted to be published by a major publisher. An admirable goal and something we've all dreamed about. But those dreams are changing. And, you know, when you're selling, what did he say was 30,000 a month? Or is it 3,000 a month? I don't know. A ridiculous number every month. You know, Robin doesn't have to work her day job anymore, she said. You know, they can live off what he's making. Awesome. Why trade that in? I don't see, you know, the way the game is changing. The way the game is changing now, here's a guy who's on the forefront of establishing independent publishing success. Right up there with Amanda Hawking, right up there with J.A. Conrath. In fantasy, there's almost no one better at self-publishing than Michael Sullivan. Man, I just don't know. I mean, it's not, and I'm not thinking about the money either. You know, if I'm selling, you know, thousands of books a month, you can take your prestige and shove it you know where. And again, I don't want it to sound like I'm trying to insult Michael. I mean, I get it. I understand it. You know, and he says, you know, when people ask you, who's your publisher? And you say, well, you know, I'm self-published. He wants to avoid that thing. And that's his choice. And I'm just, I guess, saying I wouldn't make that same choice. And I'm wondering, because it makes you think, when an author like that, who's successful, makes a decision, you wonder, what if I was in that position? And it just, I don't understand it, I guess. And again, I'm not holding it against him. You know, he's going to keep writing, and that's awesome. And he's going to make money at it. So, you know, who am I to complain? What am I making? Nothing. So, you know, good for him on his success. I'm just confused, you know? I just don't know. I wouldn't make that same decision. And then the other thing, and this comes into more of the actual topic regarding bookstores. Robin Sullivan, on the interview, states that, you know, Orbit was one the place that she wanted to get picked up at. Which was weird because, I mean, I know you're his wife, but you wanted. That's what I hear. She wanted. Okay, fine. You know, she's kind of his agent, his business manager. It was weird at first, but I got used to it. That's fine. You know, my wife would probably say the same thing. And I'm cool with that, you know. She's my partner in life. Robin's his partner in life. Cool, okay? It just was weird. Sounded weird to me. And the second thing was this thing that we all say that it's been really prevalent. The major publishers, the trade publishers, will put my book in the hands of more people. More eyeballs will be on my book because it will be in bookstores. Not for long, because one of the largest chains just went kaputsky and no one else can afford to buy it. Do you see a problem here? And there is a vicious cycle occurring now in publishing. And all of a sudden, you know, and it happened so fast. It was almost overnight. We didn't even see it. Now, I've brought this up before, and I'm going to bring it up again. Scott Sigler was on this podcast talking about where to go in this new area, this new era of publishing and writing. And it had to do with podcasting, of course. And still, people were doubting him. People were doubting what he was saying. And now we're seeing people not even podcasting are getting their books out there, and people are buying them. And they're in front of as many eyeballs as possible. And I know people keep saying, oh, well, I love the feel of a book in my hands. But the book, the printed bound book, is not going to be the primary method of reading for very much longer. The book business is going through the same kind of changes that the music business went through. And the publishing companies are making the exact same mistakes that the music business made. I'm going to give you something out of a blog post by, I think it's David Gowron. Or Gowron. I don't know. It's an Irish name, and I think it's Gowron. But you can go to, what's the website? And I'll provide the link in the show notes, but it's David Gowron, GAUGHRAN.wordpress.com. And he also wrote a book recently. It's called Let's Get Digital, How to Self-Publish and Why You Should. It's available on Amazon. I got the Kindle version for my iPhone app. And it's fantastic. And it cost me $3. It instantly got to my phone. I don't have to go to the store to buy it. I don't have to go to the store and wait for it to ship to me. I don't have to worry about flipping pages. And I'm a person who loves books. And I'm finding a heck of a lot of convenience with my phone. Now, does that mean I'm going to go get, the Last Wheel of Time book on ebook? No. But see, that's the thing. It's a collectible now. The change is happening so quickly that a lot of people don't even notice that their own perspective has changed on it. Because even when you think, well, I want to get, the book in that one, or, well, I want to get the last in the series, hello, collectible. We're collecting books. Now, do I want to collect a bunch of books and have to find bookshelves for them all? Or little books like that, that I want to just read and maybe not read all the time. That's not really a collectible. I have it now there for perpetuity. People are moving to e-readers now. The casual reader who reads the airport newsstand editions, now they can go to the Kindle store. They can get 5 books downloaded onto their phone for $3 a pop, or they can buy one hardcover. What would you do? And they can take the phone. They don't have it, they're in the airport. They don't need to take anything extra with them. It's on their phone, or it's on their little Kindle, or Nook, or whatever. It's so easy now. That's where things are going. Now, do people still have CDs? Yes. Do people still have vinyl? Yes. They don't make cassettes anymore. May get to the point where they might not even make hardbacks anymore. The mass market paperback probably will be extinct soon. It's coming, gang. It is coming. And we need to be there to take advantage of that. And it's really, too bad that some people really thought the audience was to blame for that other podcast novelist failure. Oh boy, isn't it sad? It's not really sad. It's kind of, you picked one path. You went one way with it, and instead of thinking positive. I don't know. Anyway, let's not get back into that. So, the vicious circles. It's called a negative feedback loop. This was Tim Spaulding over at librarything.com. Each drop in print sales, because ebooks is starting to take over. And if you read Let's Get Digital, he'll show you the numbers. Dean Wesley Smith has been showing the numbers. Mike Stackpole has been working the numbers. And the numbers show that ebooks, as of, was it November of last year? In that one little span from November to January, was the number one format, beating out print. The sales are climbing as more people get used to the idea of reading ebooks on these little devices. is creating a drop in print sales. It just is. Print sales are going down. And each drop in print sales causes bookstore closures. Hello, Borders, which means less stores to sell books. Borders has so many stores. If they go by the wayside, that's a whole lot less shelf space for you to get into. Even now, the bookstores don't even look like majority of bookstores. You been in a Barnes & Noble lately? Who's going to get the shelf space? The people already selling. Makes it harder and harder for the likes of you and me to get in the shelf space. But we can get on the shelf space at Amazon.com right next to the big boys. And reviews and word of mouth are still the predominant way that people buy books. You know, you look at the statistics. It's either a friend loaned it to me or somebody told me about it or gave it as a gift. It's not the predominant method of selling books is not browsing through the bookstore. I know there's people that do it, but word of mouth is what does it. And that's why the internet is so successful. That's why the changes are coming the way they are. So if there's less stores to sell books, it means a lower print run, which means higher printing costs, which means higher prices, which means another drop in print sales. Each bookstore closure is another town forced to go online to buy books, which leads to an increase in Amazon's market share, which means more readers exposed to their wall-to-wall urgings to switch to the Kindle and ebooks, which means a further drop in print sales and more bookstore closures. Each publisher reducing print runs must increase the retail price of their books, which makes the price difference between print and digital versions even more dramatic, which encourages more people to switch to ebooks, which reduces print runs and increases costs. As printing costs become more expensive, more publishers will release more titles as digital-only or digital-first editions, which will encourage even more to switch to ebooks, causing further bookstore closures. This is a series of vicious circles, he says, all feeding into each other. Most of the argument surrounding how much market share ebooks will capture seems to center on the advantages and disadvantages of ebooks, e-readers, and ebook stores in their current form. This ignores how the format, devices, and book buying experiences will evolve. More importantly, it ignores all the readers who will be forced to switch to ebooks for one reason or another, whether that's down to the restricted selection of print titles or the increased cost. So now you look on Amazon.com and you want to order a book and you see that a paperback, you like paperbacks, are $8. And, of course, the publisher, their ebooks, they're selling them for $13. That's ridiculous. Well, I'll buy the paperback. But then you see good reviews on these other authors. You know, take Joe Conrath. He's pretty popular. People are talking about him. 99 cents. What the heck? Why am I going to buy an $8 paperback when I can get the same amount of enjoyment for a buck? It's so obvious. And he says here, Joe Conrath, this will mean fewer books printed, fewer books sold, and fewer choices for readers until they're forced to buy an e-reading device if they want to read anything other than Stephen King and James Patterson. And for writers, why are you going to beat your head against the wall to try to get somebody to notice your book, to publish your book, to earn a 17.5% royalty, when you can sell on the Kindle store and make a 70% royalty and sell your book for less? And if you write good and you get good reviews, you know, people that read your books, if they like them, they'll tell people. It's what they call the long tail or the slow burn or whatever. A new writer deciding whether to self-publish or submit to agents needs to consider not just what the market is like now. They need to look at where it is going to be in 2 years. And something else. You look at Michael Sullivan's success with his books. His success self-publishing got him a trade deal. If you really want a trade deal, do you want to beat your head against the wall making nothing on a book that nobody's reading, that's sitting on somebody's desk or sitting in somebody's email, when you could be selling and writing and getting paid, building up your confidence, building up your audience, showing those trade publishers, hello, we can sell books together? Scott Sigler said it on this show. He said, you build the audience, and then you can go to your publisher and say, look, think of how many more books we can sell together. Now it's kind of getting the other way around. Think of how many books you can sell yourself. I mean, you know, is the bell ringing, McFly? I don't know. It says they need to look at where it's going to be in 2 years. 2 years is the absolute quickest any new writer could get through the query system, snag an agent, go on submission, receive an offer, go through the publication process, and finally hit the shelves. You know, will there even be agents accepting queries from unpublished writers in 5 years? Will there even be agents in 5 years, he says. You can't say yes with any confidence. You know, it says, this might seem like heresy to defenders of the status quo, but as Joe points out, quote, this message needs to be repeated over and over and over because there are still thousands of authors who spend their hard-earned cash on conventions that supposedly teach them how to write killer query letters. Of course, it goes without saying that this is money that could be spent on hiring a professional editor, a professional cover designer, and publishing yourself. And all that time spent researching agents, learning how to write query letters, personalizing each submission, sending off each partial, and waiting for responses that will never come could be spent building an audience or, you know, writing. Writing stuff you can publish yourself. Writers have more choices than ever before, and I firmly believe that this is a great time to be a writer, but only if writers seize the opportunity that is staring them in the face. The choice is yours. And I want to speak to my good friend T. Morris right now. You're having some success with Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences. I'm going to buy your book. I'm going to buy them all. Don't worry. Don't worry about that. Because, as I told him, he's the only new media celebrity, I guess you could say, name, the only name that I actually own his books. Not the fiction ones, I don't, you know. But I own I own Pip's, you know, Geist, and I'm going to buy Spectre, and I just don't have the surplus cash right now. And Mopo, you know. But I'm going to tell you something, T. Morris, and I know you're busy writing stuff, but you want to get back to fiction. And I know you're going to try to reboot Moravi. It's calling to you, brother. I mean, how are you going to pitch to your other agent? Are you going to take that time? I'm just asking, because it could be selling right now. It's that good. I like it that much, and he's my friend, and he's my buddy, and you know, I may be a little biased there, but you know, it's good. Even as written, even with the elves, it's good. Dragon Age. Look at Dragon Age. Dragon Age is so popular, and yet it has elves. I'm just picking on T now, but it's just only because I just want to read it. Yeah, I could buy the paperback. I know, but, and I'm just, you know, I just really wish that Escape from Moravi would just happen as the characters are, you know. It's rebooting the characters just kind of seems like I'm going to miss something. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Oh, I pick on him so with Moravi sometimes. I mean, heck, you could put that Moravi ebook out right now and just boom, you start selling, man. You just would. Oh. And anyway, so there's David Gowron, and he also has his book out. The math is so easy, and yet people buy into these myths, and you can get an editor to go through your novel for a few hundred bucks. Now, I know I don't have a few hundred bucks sitting around. Here's what you do, okay? You start selling stuff on Smashwords. Start with short stories if you want. There's plenty of people out there that will help you. There are people that we know. We know each other. We can use each other and sort of peer review people you trust. You know, you start small. And as you know, if you sell one or two or three things and they start selling, if you're good, you got to have confidence in yourself. And you don't know how good you are until you try. You don't know You know, oh, well, my stuff probably stinks. I need a professional editor to look at it. You know, sometimes editors kill books. Okay? They're just people. You know? They're just people like you and me. And you can ask, you know, Dean Wesley Smith has written this before. He says, you know, I have been a publisher. I have been an editor. You know what? Sometimes I'm an idiot. So, you know, if you have something that's finished, put it out there. See what happens. These days, you know, a publisher is not going to come in and say, oh, well, you know, this book really stunk. We don't want him. They won't notice your stinky book. If your book is stinky, they won't ever see it. And anymore, you look at, I forget who said this once before, but this came up after the Scott Sigler thing. You know, and this came up with J.C. Hutchins. And he says, well, you know, St. Martin's, they didn't like the fact that it was already out in print, and so they wanted to wait. And it hasn't been more than a couple years. And already, the fact that it was already out and so popular is the bonus now. Do you see how it's flip-flopped all of a sudden? That's what I'm talking about. And reading this book, and reading Dean Wesley Smith's blog, and reading Michael Stackpole's blog, and reading Joe Conrath's blog, and seeing what Amanda Hawking is doing, and seeing all these people out there, just part three of this book is just testimonials from self-published writers that I've never heard of that are selling thousands of copies of books a month. How much is your name worth if people are already buying your books? You have a name with those people. It's incredible the way things are changing now. And the advent of the internet means we can see these changes coming. We can see what happened to the music business. You know, people go and buy their music a track at a time without buying a whole album full of 60% crappy music. You know, I've done it. We've all done it. And the formats are changing. You know, people say, oh, you know, they'll never get off CDs. Yeah, okay. That was, there you go. Thank you, Poindexter. You know, your library can now go on this little phone here that I have. You see? Right there. That's the sound of my phone. Okay? It's 5 inches by 3 inches. Charge it every day. It does fine. I can read books on it. So I've got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 books on this Kindle app. And how much would those 4 books be if they're not on my app? I can put these 4 books in my pocket. It's here, gang. I mean, we always want, well, you know, I don't like reading on a screen or whatever. You read on a screen every day. And the Kindles and Nooks and things are a whole lot easier on the eyes than reading off a screen. You know, we once thought, you know, ebooks, it used to be, well, I don't like reading on my computer. Now you don't have to, friends. And instead of stacking up bookshelves and, you know, selling old books because, well, I got to get rid of them, now you don't need so much shelf space. It's time we all think about what we're doing, people. Think about the future. Do not be that generation that says, oh, well, I like the way things were. I like the way things are now. You know? Oh, it's so funny. So funny. When we become adults, we become so jaded. And we think, oh, you know, it's like video games. Oh, how much can video games change anymore? You know? Do we really want to be caught behind the curve? Because there's going to be people out there that hold on to those publishing myths forever and ever and ever. And until the cows literally come home. And I'm not going to be one of those people. And you shouldn't be one of those people either. Because when you just read, it's $3. It's $3. That's less than a latte, okay? Spend $3 and read Let's Get Digital. Look at the math yourself. Figure out, you know, what was the question? Dean Wesley Smith says, you always ask this question, what, and it was about agents, what can an agent do for me that I can't do for myself? And that question is now pretty much nothing. You can still pitch to editors. He tells you how if you read Killing the Sacred Cows of Publishing. You know, the slush pile, it's really quite easy to get around. Now, it's not easy to get picked up because you got to be good. But if you're good, an editor, like he says a lot, an editor's not going to let a good book go past him because you didn't follow, you know, stated guidelines. Now, I'm not saying, you know, ignore the guidelines and send your book anyway. What I'm saying is check with a veteran of the industry. Read Killing the Sacred Cows of Publishing on his blog. Read the New World of Publishing series on his blog. Read Christine Catherine Rush at Chris with a K writes.com. Read The Business Rush on there. Find out from the people that are making it happen. Not just me, you know. I'm just a mouth, and I've gone on too long. If you want to get in touch with me, you can email the show at podcast@indianajim.net. I admit my mailbox has gotten full. I just emptied it out. I have it forwarded to my Gmail anyway. So you can email podcast@indianajim.net. You can dial the voicemail line, which is 760-705-INDY, 760-705-INDY. You can also leave a comment on the blog post for this episode, podcast.indianajim.net. For now, this is me saying, I'll see you later. Hopefully a lot sooner than the last time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Adventures of Indiana Jim, a production of Visionary Creative Works. Visit podcast.indianajim.net and leave comments on the blog. Send in your emails and audio feedback to podcast@indianajim.net. I'm Dr. John Smart. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.